Hi, Mark.
Yeah.
Oh, your audio is weird.
I was adjusting my mic.
Oh, okay.
Hang on.
Well, there we go. Professional podcasting.
I only like to get ready once we go live.
That's good. So let's start with this clip. Let's start with the funny, because last episode we got a little serious, and let's start a little bit funny. This is Ben Benakis, the stand-up aficionado, who very well might be the new mayor of Toronto.
I think it's Bankus. Apologies, Ben. Benakis. Trying to get him on the show. Is it Benakis or am I crazy? Benakis.
Bankus.
I think just Bankus.
Okay.
It's good. Oh shit. Now I feel bad. There we go. Right off the start.
Here's Ben.
I kind of want the Chinese to take over already. I'm ready. I think they'll solve a lot of problems, would they not? Right? They solved the homeless problem. Oh, you like camping? Oh, we built you a nice camper. It's near Fort McMurray. Yeah, use the shower. Also, no more gay people. Okay, sorry. That's the funny thing. If China, all the like right wing people be like, I don't want China to take over. They come in and be like, no more gays, no more homeless. You can smoke inside. You'd be like, fuck it. Who's the new prime minister? Xi Jinping, whatever. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a shit. You can smoke in the airport. This is amazing. Holy shit, my white kid knows math now. This is unbelievable.
Okay, I liked him before, and then I heard his stand-up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, the guy's funny. And it's funny because it's true.
It is true.
I've been saying this for a while. I mean, okay. I haven't been back to China in about 6 or 7 years. So I don't know. I've heard stuff on both sides about how this credit score stuff is actually going there on the ground.
You're due for your re-education. You need to get back there. So you can...
But I'm sure I've said it on the show many times because I've been telling people since I was there that it is one of the things that formed my idea of, okay, liberty is something that comes within constraints. Because when you go there, you render to Caesar what Caesar's. Like, right? Stay out of macro government and economics. And on the ground, living is the freest thing I've ever experienced because it's within constraints. And even if you look at like the libertarian ideal, whatever, go back 100, 150 years to the Wild West, there were constraints, a lot of constraints, and they were societal, right? Like they were right off the heels of Puritanism, which is why you could have this sort of libertarian ideal. But because the society was holding people within these strict borders, and the same thing, liberty happens in a very controlled petri dish, in a sense. And to me, it's the exact opposite of like I was just in Mexico, and there you have the worst of both worlds, where you've got complete tyranny from the cartels. And then the government on the other end is being a lot, it's reminiscent of Canada in many ways, where they're trying to look competent by like banning smoking everywhere. So you've got basically anarcho, like the shit that matters, it's a terrible job. But then when it comes to micromanaging your life, they're all over it, which is basically exactly what we have in Canada. You can't do anything, but the borders are open. It's like our approach to COVID. Leave the borders open, do whatever, but close down your business and you can't leave the house. Whereas in China, from my experience of actually being there, which I guarantee Ben Bernakis / Bankus has actually been to China, or he wouldn't come up with that joke. Because you only get that from being on the ground, where you're like, oh, wait. All the things we associate with being left-wing, this whole culture war thing, does not exist there at all. There's no trans, there's no thing. And is that, I wanted to ask you, is that because the left wing here has, you know, they always say, oh, everyone's in the culture war. I don't think so. I think the right is like always being reactionary to the culture war, but the left has just gone on this to crazy town with all of their things. Where's the left? What their concerns is this because of cultural Marxism that they're not focused on anything
so
important anymore? So
here's the thing. I can't speak really deeply about the Chinese or China or what's going on there because I've never been, and everything I get is from secondary sources or you know the news. So which I'm highly doubtful of. Like even the big thing about the Uyghur Muslims, I'm not saying that's not happening. Mm-hmm. I'm also saying like it's like who's telling you it's happening? Oh,
right.
The same people who lied to you about the flu. Okay, well then I'm gonna pin it over here. One, because I don't really care. Unfortunately, I have so much care to give, and what's happening with ethnic Muslims in China, it just doesn't register in my to-do list.
And of all the ethnicities, Muslim is down on that list.
Well, yeah, I mean, fuck them. I have less commentary about, let's say, China, and more commentary about Western liberalism. The problem with Western liberalism in a nutshell, and we'll explore this more when we get to Lindsay, is that because it came in to a culture that was based in Christianity, heavily based in Christianity, and the hierarchy of Christianity was what built the West from the Byzantines on up, right? Everything we've inherited, all our law structures, mm-hmm. everything that we can think of came through a Christian lens. Whether you like it or not, that's just the truth. And
well, and you still see it when you hear AOC quoting the Bible to Christians telling them how to behave. They do it all the time, right?
And now the thing is with religion in general is that it builds a high trust society because it creates a baseline. So if I being a Christian, you being a Christian, we now know that we believe in basically the same things, right? We believe that, you know, Christ is Lord. He was, all the basic things we understand, and we have a moral moral substrata to deal with us, to deal with each other with. Now, you might be a shit Christian, I might be a great Christian, right? Like you might be, you might have other problems going on that would create a distrust within a relationship, but that's going to get revealed, right? It's going to be harder for you to hide that because I have a baseline to judge your behavior on. That's what creates high trust societies. When you have a high trust society, you don't really need that many laws because you basically are going under the pretext that, well, while murder and horrible things can happen, and we do need to have some laws about some of the bigger things, a lot of the smaller stuff you don't really need to worry about, like homosexuality. You don't need laws against homosexuality in a high trust, let's say, Christian society, because the majority of people aren't going to be homosexual. And because all the things that lead to homosexuality, because I don't believe it's genetic, I do think it's cultural or through abuse and a few other things. But regardless, it's like the conditions for that to happen just aren't really present. It's not that it doesn't happen. It's not that it couldn't happen. It's not that it's not like rape and murder and all those things didn't happen in Christian nations. Of course it did, but there's a lot more mechanisms to deal with it before you get to the legal situation. Like my thing is that once you start making laws against, stuff that really should be handled in a social situation, like let's even smoking, right? Like smoking indoors. Well, you don't need to have laws about it because either everyone smokes or almost no one does. And if almost no one smokes and you're the guy smoking a cigar in the middle of a restaurant, people are going to go over to you and go, hey, man, yeah. Can you knock
that out? Or another way of looking at it is there's always going to be laws, but it's what kind of laws and who's enforcing them, right? Are they cultural? Are they, so you could say even norms are the laws. And if you're working in a high trust society, people like you said, are operating from the same substrata. Okay. Are the fundamentals in alignment? Then if the fundamentals are in alignment, then the culture is going to police itself. So there's still rules. There's still going to be really strict social order, but it's going to be enforced one-on-one through having a shared fundamentals. Like, okay, well, if you stealing is bad,
Let's
go with like the 10. There's the big 10, right?
There's a useful distinction, I think, here, because, you know, it gets lumped into the we use the word rule of law, but you can actually make a distinction between rules and laws.
Right.
Right. Whereas a rule, it may not get you into jail, but it won't get you invited back to the party.
Exactly.
There's a whole bunch of clips, and I didn't have them prepped, so I won't go searching for them right now. But there seems to be this new trend going on in one corner of YouTube where, like, Westerners go to Japan or places, and I think it's mostly Japan, and start some shit. And
oh shit!
And the Japanese just don't have any of it. Like, there's this one guy where he's on the subway and he's like, he's being a dick. And then the two Japanese younger guys, and probably in their 20s or 30s, just walk over and very politely, but very firmly, explain to him that, hey, this is Japan. That we don't do that here. What are you doing? Like, you're being an asshole. There's another one where I don't know the ethnicity of the group of guys, but there were in Japan, there's a strict, like, no loitering rules, maybe laws, I'm not sure. And it was looked like a hotel, and there was a parking attendant guy, and these guys were standing around, and he just goes over and he's more like, yeah, no, knock it off. And they're like, whoa. He's like, you're in Japan. Yada 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 yada. You're in Japan. This is how we do things here.
Yeah.
Don't care.
Well, and you see, like Ryan Dawson's clips where he goes into a store and it's a honor system, right? Everything, you go in, you pay, there's nobody there, there's no attendant, everything is come, take it if you want. And you could say that again, you could write books and books and books on this, I think, because, like, even in Westmount where I live, because it's a you're familiar with it, it's a very upper class neighborhood, you can go and the stores here that are lining the streets will put half of their goods outside on the sidewalk, and it's just expected that they won't be stolen, because again, this I think that reflects the hypocrisy in Western culture, where our thought leaders and our influencers preach one thing and do the exact opposite. And so if you actually live in the communities where the politicians live and go to the schools where they go, you see how they the really strict social order that they operate under, not that they would put onto the lower classes who they think aren't either willing or capable of abiding by order, you know, an ordered society. But if you go and actually go to their town, you see, oh, okay, well, it's very high trust in that community. So,
well, which is what will lead us to 15-minute cities. Here's a thought I've been bouncing around my head, and it's going to be an unpopular position, but it's like 15-minute cities aren't the problem. It's the administrators. So you could pitch a 15-minute city idea. Hang on. I know.
Go.
Backing off.
I'm going to say it. No, just because I want to take a drink.
And maybe 15-minute cities might be more of an extreme example, but you can do with AI, even ESG, right? Is that the concept of it, the formal concept of ESG isn't actually really all that bad if you're taking it from a neutral position, right? That companies have that everyone in a community, whether they be companies, governments, or whatever, has a responsibility to, you know, not be harmful, like deliberately harmful, whether it be psychologically, economically, environmentally, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The problem we run into, of course, and well, this is leading us into the Fetterman clip, is that the people who are in charge of this stuff are fucking retarded.
or
evil. This is like, we have, it's your A-B choice. Is like, do you take the retarded one who's so stupid he can't be evil because he's just like, he doesn't have the mental bandwidth to be evil.
Yeah.
Like,
that's well, or the them. Way I see them is childish. What they want is to have their cake and eat it too.
No sacrifice,
right? Exactly. Like we can't have hang because this on. Was like I, this is why I'd always I piss off the libertarians, I piss off the Christian nationalists, I get everybody doesn't like me because I've had my own thing, which I always called myself a libertarian nationalist, and I had to explain that every time because maybe I would reverse it, say a nationalist libertarian, because to me nationalist means, and I use it very sort of literally, in that you have to have a nation first. And the nation is the people with the shared history, language, culture, morals, rules, then you can get liberty. So I want liberty, but through that.
This is why I love you. Okay. There's many reasons I love you. There's many reasons I love you because you're beautiful and it's nice, you're nice to look at. But
that's the worst reason.
No, it's a good reason.
Love me for my intellect.
But hang on, but I'm getting to that. But it's downstream from your looks. but here's the thing, right? Because I had this exact same thought when I was thinking about the James Lindsay thing, is that people are droning on about Christian nationalism. Like, you know, you need, in order to have Christian nationalism, you need a nation full of Christians.
Right, exactly.
It's like, if you don't have that first thing,
yeah, without the nation, the Christian, how do you get the nationalism without a nation? Yeah,
worrying about Christian nationalists is literally like worrying about the boogeyman under your bed. It's like, do you have a nation full of Christians right now? Do you, in positions of power? No, then don't worry about it. Oh, but they're gonna do. What are they gonna do? What are they gonna do? Seriously, what are they gonna do? The entire system is organized against them. They step one foot over the line. Hell, they organize and do a protest rally. I bet you there's gonna be a few feds in that crowd. They're gonna start some shit, and the whole bunch of them are gonna go to jail.
Yeah, like, they might walk through your Capitol building,
right? And see look how well that worked out for everybody. It's like, yeah. Come on. Sorry, to get back to your point though, before we get to the Fetterman thing. So liberalism leads to this, and how it leads to this is on two fronts. Liberalism essentially is flattening out the hierarchy. Liberalism hates hierarchy. Liberals, the liberal mindset, progressive, liberty-minded people, hates hierarchies because hierarchies automatically set an illiberal order, right?
Right.
Because if you're on a let's say you're on a sports team. And there's the best player in the world on your team, and you're not that best player in the world. You're not as free as that best player in the world. Like that best player gets to do a whole bunch of things that you're not going to be able to do just by default, right?
Yeah,
by
he's probably a free agent to start with.
Getting the attention. He can go to any team he wants. He can, you know, just by recognition of a meritocracy, meritocratic, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, meritocratic. In a hierarchy that praises ability, which is usually what hierarchies are based on, more or less. Mm-hmm. Not always, but generally speaking, if you're not at the top, you're not as free as the guy who's at the top.
Well, that's really interesting. Sorry,
and liberalism hates that,
right?
Because liberalism essentially was created and is substantiated by mid-level people who wanted to subvert the entire system, hated the king, this idea that a king is in position of power, right? Second only to God, in many cases, has fiat rule, and doesn't have to pay attention to all the mid-level guys who will all want power because it's a selfish, self-hating system. Right, it's a system based on resentment. Communism is the most obvious form of this. But the entire artifice is a resentment-based system. When you're and it's comes down to the idea of, I was hashing this idea on the King Pill Discord yesterday, but I now view like Elon Musk and those guys trying to get off Earth and go to Mars is literally trying to escape the cross, because what the cross is a symbol of our of humility. It's God literally humbling himself beyond our capacity of understanding, because you have to think of it like God becomes man, then he then chooses to be sacrificed on a cross, which is a very humiliating experience, crown of thorns, all that stuff. But the actual act was always humiliating. That was part of the torture in ancient Rome.
Right.
So he's humbled to the most extreme degree, and he's God. So he could literally just get off it whenever he wants to.
As a kid, I always wondered, like, why don't you just call the angels and do the thing, you know?
Because of two verses, right? There's two key verses in that. Oh Lord, why have you forsaken me? God forsakes himself in order to complete the humbling nature of man, right? To bring us down, to make us aware of how low we are. And then, as he's dying, it is finished. which is literally meaning what was speculating. It's that that's when creation actually finished. And now we're into this new thing. That's why we're in the, always in the end times, because creation ended on the cross. What the cross does is it grounds us to this world and humbles us to this world. And the only way, the meek shall inherit the earth, the only way to the, you must be spiritually poor in order to in order to inherit the kingdom. We are all spiritually poor. We are all cast out and now begging for God to give us grace. We're begging for these things. You know, we are all beggars in the streets hoping to get the alms of grace. Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Is mercy in that case, in that prayer, has two meanings. It means to, you know, to grant me mercy, don't do the worst thing possible to me. And also mercies can be alms, can be awards, right? But given to you by someone who is rich, who is the most richest, who is the most richest in spirit, it's God. So that's what we do. So I'm laying the basis for this Christian conversation. I don't want to lose viewers on this, but I think it's really important to understand that that liberalism is the attempt to squash that cross out, to bring truth into right and wrong, fact. So people think, well, I'm factually right, so therefore I'm true. It's like, no. You know, you can be nihilistic and factual. You can get all your facts right and still miss the mark by a mile.
Yeah.
Because if truth is truly hitting the bullseye, you know, your facts don't matter. The narrative matters. The story can be true, and all the other facts are just parts of the story. So,
I mean, that's an interesting, if I could try and condense that down a little bit, it's because this is something I've been trying to wrap my brain around completely, is like, what is the flaw in liberalism? Because it sounds great on paper, and there's a lot of it's the goals are the goals are the same as what you would get in a rightly ordered society. But what they skip is the how to get there properly. A good example, I think, something that really affected me growing up that I never really thought about until now, is I went to a private Christian school as part of what's called the Accelerated Christian Education Program. If you're in the US, it's very, very popular, very common. And the structure of the school, one of the things that I really liked was they had what was called a privilege program. So everywhere from like grade 7 plus, if based on your grades and your performance, your amount of demerits, how you behaved, basically it's a social credit system in high school, or from like 8 up, you had A, B, or C privilege. And so if your grades were poor, if you were late, if you were talking in class, all those things, you would have none. And then if you were a little bit better, you had C. And then if you had something over 90% average, you were always on time, you had A privilege. And A privilege meant you got to decide whether or not you went to class. You could take breaks. And basically you were treated like an adult in university. Set your own schedule, do whatever you want. And your privileges would be reevaluated every week or every month and reassigned. And it was extremely meritocratic and really representative, because it taught you, oh, okay, it's not just like, if you look at this Mizzy guy, right, in the UK, he's all over the news because there's no structure given to him. And the reward punishment thing is completely backwards, completely off base. So basically, what reason does he have to not go around harassing people? There's no punishment, and he gets a ton of reward. So you can't blame him. Imagine if you set up the system where the kid is rewarded for being a jackass. What are you going to get from kids? Bunch of jackasses, right? So I don't know if I could bring that full circle, but it comes back to what you were saying with this is what liberalism does, gets rid of that healthy hierarchy where there are meritocratic reward systems for healthy behaviors. And it says, no, let's just go to the end. Let's get the freedom without the structure around it, where you need to actually have good behaviors, good healthy community, good families.
It's a parasite. So it's a parasite born out of the Enlightenment that has attached itself to a Christian nation. And what it did is eat out all the high trust abilities of a Christian nation. Now in China, maybe it's from Confucianism, maybe it's you know, other social mechanisms that are, you know, we're studying.
I'm not sure. That's what I wanted to like dig into that. Sure. And figure out like, what is it? Because you can't lay it all of it at the feet of Christianity if something, I mean, but there is a big Christian influence in China, but I think this is not specific. I think you can have healthy societies based on other things, but they're going to be damn similar. I'm sure you could overlay them.
Let me put it this way. You can't have a healthy Western society without Christianity. That's my position, right? Because it's 2,000 years of tradition that's been embedded in our psyche. Like it's in everything. In order to get rid of it, and it's never worked in a Western society or in a Christian society. Like it maybe worked in China, but it certainly didn't work in Russia. It flatlined the country, right? Like the problem in Russia and with the Soviets wasn't just Sovietism, which is horrible, an idea by itself. But the problem with it is that it removed God from the hierarchy and replaced it with man, this Uberman, this. You know, Stalin, it was the Supreme Soviet, like this, you have to create this meta man to supplant it. But because no one can agree upon what that is. And because we all kind of know that human beings are fallible, it doesn't fill that void. It doesn't scratch the itch the way that Jesus does. And the way that we can organize around Jesus. And like, look, China, you know, God bless them. I hope they're all become Orthodox in the next 100 years. Who knows? But we can also just say that China wouldn't even be China right now without the West.
Well, that's it. Like this, I will give it. I will give it a caveat.
introducing Christian ideas into their system because all our economy, all that stuff. There's a great book. Was it Tom Holland wrote this great book about it's called Dominion, and he just goes through like the history, and he's more about Western Catholicism and that stuff, but he basically just details like, yeah, all that stuff, everything that you can think of is Christian message.
Similar. Well, I was just going to caveat my China praise with it's very likely that what they're experiencing is kind of like our 90s, where they're kind of at peak civilization because they got opened up, made really rich all of a sudden, and it could go bad in a second because they haven't set up proper structures. But when I happen to be there, it's like, you know, everybody's on vacation kind of thing, enjoying the fruits of their newfound wealth without establishing it. And now they are prone to what happened to them in the past 3 years, where they're like, oh, bye-bye, everything.
Talking about things going bad. Here's John Fetterman. Remember Fetterman? Can you imagine being, just as a side note, can you imagine being Mehmet Oz right now, seeing these clips, going, they literally they chose the retard. This was going to happen, by the way. We all told you this was going to happen. Like, as a casual observer, someone who has no dog in this fight, I don't care who won that election, but I was like, you know, if Fetterman gets in, you're literally electing someone who has got brain damage, and that's going to show up, and it did. No. Let me just play the clip.
Is it a staggering responsibility that the head of a bank could literally crash our economy? It's astonishing. That's like if you have, I mean, like, and they also realize is that now they have, it's in a guaranteed way to be saved. Isn't it appropriate that this kind of control should be more stricter?
Okay, pause. Sorry. I'm not gonna let you get through this. But does brain damage make you say more stricter? But how? Like that's not, you don't get that way from a stroke, right? Like you had to have spoken that way previously. As far as I know, right? I don't know. I've never had a whatever he had.
Let's put it this way. I don't think he was a Mensa member and then had the stroke and then turned out this way. Like I don't think we're talking about a high bar. And I don't really like attacking people's intelligences because I just think it's
intelligences
because I say shit like that too. I think it's like it's a cheap insult, but sometimes it's accurate. Like,
well, and we're not sitting U.S. senators. Like, we're not like in the club of the 500 most powerful people on earth, right? So I think
is the guy who makes laws.
Again, to the thumbnail for today's episode, I tried to juxtapose the as you said, how it started, where it's going. This is the experiment in self-governance. You still up on that democracy kick?
Goddamn, man! You know, let the people vote.
Like, yeah, well, but isn't the entire point of the system is that we are not only allowed to but obliged to critique the people that we put in these positions to represent us?
Well, because and to go Girardian for a second, this is the danger of this is it's modeling. Because now imagine this. You want to road high trust society. This is a classic way of doing it. One of the ways that you have a high trust society is that people have expectations of, let's say, the representatives. And again, it's even in the name representative, to represent us. This man is representing you, Philadelphia. It's Philadelphia. Yeah. What's the state? I don't know, wherever.
Pennsylvania,
yeah. He's the face of Pennsylvania. He's what you think you are. That's by definition.
From I've only been there once, but from what I hear.
Fine. But
all I remember is the Bill Burr bit when he's stuck in Philly. Right, yeah. And he just goes off on the crowd for like 30 minutes.
Yeah. Fair enough. But again, this is, to bring this back to Christianity for a second, what Christ, the great thing about Christ is, and you can do this if you're a secularist, by the way, you don't even have to be religious to be able to do this. Because even in my old atheist days, Chris Hitchens, and it was an anti-theist, and I was very much in the Chris Hitchens school of line of thinking. Even whatever, never said shit about Jesus, because Jesus was kind of perfect. And the most that you'd ever get an atheist is like, well, you know, it's a story, it's not really real, but he's a good guy. Like, you know, as a fictional character.
Yeah, pretty much. Unless you're Jewish, he is the representation of the ideal.
Right.
Criticize Christians all day long and the church all day long. And this has always been my position is, well, they're human, but the ideal is the ideal. And the whole point, and what I can embrace about Christianity is that the entire point of the whole thing is that you're not that. You're not the ideal, but you should strive for it.
And if you think I'm being hyperbolic about this, your representative being the face of you, and this is and its importance and ideals, if you think I'm being hyperbolic, this explains the Trump effect. This explains the Trump derangement syndrome, especially from guys like Sam Harris. Sam Harris doesn't have much of an intellectual reason to hate Trump, and in fact, his pet intellectual thing of saying that no one has free will. We are all just collections of our experiences, would by default excuse Trump, but he hates him. He spurgs out about
because,
it. Breaks
because
brain.
Because Trump.
Hang on, let me just finish. Because Trump being president represents America, and Sam Harris is America, and Sam Harris cannot deal with the idea of Trump representing him.
Mm-hmm.
The gulf between those two things shall never be bridged.
Right. But I also see it in the same way as like when you're on that side, if you're a famous atheist, and so you end up worshiping things like democracy and government, and then Trump becomes the ideal, and Trump is a terrible Jesus. if that's what you're expecting from your representative, then it explains TDS completely. I would be livid too if that was my ideal.
On the flip side, of course, that leads you to getting Biden. Here's the only good thing about the Biden presidency is because of AI, we get things like this, which is if you listen to last week's show, we played that clip with a transgendered whatever it was, drinking Bud Light, trying to be like a
drinking is an overstatement.
Well, being a dollar store,
being near a Bud Light,
Right. Someone's put this together, which is Joe Biden's face implanted on this, which I think is hilarious.
All right, everyone. So it's Friday night. I'm getting ready to go out. I'm feeling cunt. But before I go out,
okay. He's saying I'm feeling cunt.
Did you Google
it? I hear I'm feeling cunt. I think actually it's I'm feeling cut, but I like cunt better.
But neither one makes more sense than the other. So go with the most extreme.
Exactly. And the cunt thing is brilliant.
It's going to catch on. It's got legs.
Say it again, because
YouTube loves us already.
I'm feeling cunt. I'm feeling cunt, Mark. I feel like we should start off the stream every single week that way. Sorry, Mark's mom. But
I think she gave up watching a long time ago.
What can I tell you? I can still say sorry to her. I wake up some days and I'm just feeling cunt.
I've got a pregame. And the only way I pregame is with an ice cold Bud Light. So good. Ah, happy Friday. All right.
See, it's this disturbing. Is I can't
it's
hate,
disturbing.
I can't hate AI because of this.
It's also like this is what we deserve. This is because I remember reading.
If we're going to hell, Mark, if we're going to hell, we might as well have a few laughs along the way. That's all.
Bullet train to heck. This reminds me. I read something when I was like 19 in GQ. And it was interviewing somebody, I don't know if it was Tibet or something, but he was a leader of this country, and he was elected through a tribe of elders, raised as a child, could have been the Dalai Lama, who, you know, things didn't turn out great, but at least it made sense to me at the time. He's like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? You let the dumbest people choose your leaders. You literally let everybody vote? And I was like, not interested in politics at the time at all. And I thought, that's a good point. And I was even with the thumbnail, I was trying to come up with something of like, should we let everyone decide? Because
everyone above 18. That's your only stipulation is 16. You have to be above 18.
Why not 16? Yeah,
12. I'm 2 years old. I let my daughter vote. Just it in an A/B choice world, who it doesn't matter. Like that's kind of the whole situation. Touché. It's like, when you let everyone have it, this is the same thing about rights. The idea of universal rights, that everyone has these rights, is bullshit on the face of it. We have Jay Forte joining us on Rumble. Anyone who's watching, join us over on Rumble. We live stream there now exclusively because fuck YouTube, and yeah, we're on Spotify, iTunes, all the places. So. Where was I going with this? What was I saying? I derailed myself. Fuck.
God damn you, Jay.
My memory is gone, is cratered, by the way. It's gone. Like, might have to do
next clip.
I don't talk shit about Neuralink because I'm looking at that going, just to be able to tie my fucking shoes. Something liberal order bullshit. I don't know. Yeah,
voting. Hey. Everyone gets to vote. Your daughter should vote.
Vote. Yeah, everyone gets to vote. But there's no. Again, it works in a high trust society where you're assuming your assumptions based on that you and I want the best for this country. Now we might disagree on
taxation.
Yeah, we might disagree on taxation or you know this that some novel shit. You know where the roads should go, but overall, we have the same vision of going of protecting what we have and building on that, and you know not carving up kids. Like that should just kind of be a default, and when you don't have that anymore, because this is what this liberalism leads to, you get stuff like this. North Face just came out with a new course. We're entering Pride Month. Here we go.
We are, aren't we?
Hi, it's me, Patagonia, a real-life homosexual. And today, I'm here with the North Face.
We are here to invite you to come out in nature with us.
Wow, this is nice. We like to call this little tour the Summer of Pride.
Okay, first of all, I'm calling this. Homosexuals don't to nature. They don't go wilderness. This is the thing that Dylan Mulvaney did one like this too. It's like, we all know that's bullshit. It's like blacks can't swim and gays don't hike. There's no gay.
They go downtown. Like
deep wood hikers. It doesn't happen. I don't know why. You know, maybe it's J4Z says bugs are icky. Sure. Maybe you can't be fabulous in the middle of the woods. I don't know.
Heels and grass. Don't mix.
The boa gets fucking caught up in the trees. Whatever. But they don't do it. And also, like, we're in the wilderness. I'm in a field.
Listen. I'm also gonna jump. I'm gonna jump in there with my classic liberalist ism stuff. I've a ton of gay friends, been around most of my career in all the different fields I've worked in, and the difference is this does not represent any gay people I know. I don't know what the fuck this is, because I know gay people. You would not, unless they told you, you wouldn't know. And that was gay until I was talking to someone this week. I think until what, 80s? I remember the 80s. We were even like, we didn't know because, okay, like the way they joke and they look at like trans. Look up any 80s glam band and show that to someone who's like 19 and they're like, oh, I'm bending gender norms.
Twisted,
it's like,
sister.
Dude, they were wearing spandex, long hair, makeup, literally everything except cutting their dicks off. They fit that the mold that you think you're Twisted Sister, okay? Like they looks, that was their whole deal. Yeah. I was posting pictures of like Slash in the 80s. Today, trans all day. Conservatives will be freaking out. Probably were at the time. But I think what happened is when there was laws against sodomy, right? When you had that sort of social order where people knew that it existed, but it was in the place, it was in the closet. And then the first people who really sort of broke that barrier was drag, the ones who were really out there. And they had, because it was a mockery of women, they had this, oh yeah, we're talking about where did this gay affect come from? And it seemed to be influenced by drag, which were the first ones that were out there, but it was an affect in mimicry of womanhood. And then because those were the first influences that were exposed to the average homosexual, which I think whatever it is, genetic or upbringing, probably 50-50, who knows. That was the first outed expression of it. So they took on that effect. And then you had this queer being a political identity, not a proclivity to be attracted to men. And then now you have this clown show, which it's its own thing, and I can't really explain it. I follow Gays Against Groomers, a lot of these accounts on Twitter that are like, this is not us, this does not represent us, we don't want anything to do with politics, we don't want anything to do with your kids, we want to be left alone. And I'm sympathetic to those people, because again, whether it's nature or nurture, I don't condemn them, because I'm a good Christian. Go ahead.
Well, As a good Christian, all I'm saying is like, look, the sin here is fornication, and that's for all of us.
Right, that so goes the, across. The, you can be worse and straight.
Yeah, the sin of fornication is having sex for pleasure and pleasure alone, like without any design to have children. Now, obviously, if you're homosexual, you're having homosexual sex, you can't have kids. So that's why you just practice abstinence. Like, here's a crazy thing, right? The reaction. I want to just play this ESG thing, and we'll get to James Lindsay saying, I know we're butting up on time, but I'll get this in here, is that the only thing that Christians in general are, and I'm just talking in general, because I'm sure we could pick apart and find some crazy wackadoodle fucking position over here, whatever, but the overall position of Christians about this stuff is that just don't do it. Like the only thing that a Christian nation would say to you that if it's being rightful, is that we're not going to send you in jail. We're not going to hurt you. We're not going to kill you. We're just going to tell you not to do the thing you want to do. So,
right. But then you get to the well, why? Why not do it?
We stopped saying don't do it.
What, 10 years ago, and look where we got. So the slippery slope is a law, and right. It is yet to be disproven.
Because if you have, if you allow fornication to happen, even with straight people, right? If you say, well, you know, straight people can have casual sex, but not the gays. And says, no, all of you can't have it. Because across the board, and you know, it's almost like I can almost see the thing the liberal mean, like, oh, what you say these guys can't do, it, but you want to make everyone can do it, and if for nothing
because it is extremely harmful to women, and therefore harmful to men. That's a good enough reason.
Here's the thing.
Took me a while to learn that.
When you're making this argument that casual sex is fine, it's like okay. Maybe for you, maybe it worked out for you, but have you considered all the ramifications and consequences of your actions, not just for your partners, but for everyone else in society?
Right.
Can you factor that in? No? Okay, so then don't do it. Because even if you, even if we say that you and your little example, your little life, somehow escaped all the odds, and you and all your casual sex partners went on to have a lovely life and never had any damage done from the encounter. Fantastic, good for you. There's millions of other people.
You're not the average millions of other people on this planet.
Yeah. Right. There's billions of other people.
Okay, that's always been again another one of my arguments, and I'll still stick by this because philosophically it makes sense to me. Was Stefan Molyneux's universally preferable behavior? It makes sense. Mm-hmm. If your IQ 110 and up, it's basically another way of looking at the Christian ethic. And it does work out if you're that's not the average Fetterman voter. What they need is the culture around them to go, nope, don't do that. Why? Because I'm going to hit you if you do. Like if you can't.
Let's get to, sorry, not to cut you off, but we're just running up on time here. Let's get to further proof that.
Look at you moving me along.
I know this is our segment called "It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like I Was Fucking Right." Here's the mainstream finally talking about ESG. This is a connection to Bud Light. Of course, so Target comes out with a gay lineup, a pride lineup for kids. Everyone's shutting them down or losing market share.
Yeah, but wait, did you see the terrorism though? A guy went and took one of the signs down.
Okay. North Face comes out with we just watched a little bit of that ad, right? Gays in the woods. Whatever. More like
at least be glad.
You thought when I was growing up, it was always gays in the park. They were cruising in the parks. Now they've moved to the forest. They're just taking territory, man. We gotta stop this. You have this, you have, I don't know, who is it? All the other brands are falling in line. And again, if you're approaching this with a Tim Pool level of discourse or analysis, you're like, why is this happening?
Protest is crazy.
Woke go broke. Okay. All you're doing, and look, I want to make this very clear to anyone who's listening. I'm not telling you to not boycott these brands. Go ahead. Do it. Do what you got to do. Viva, you know, joy de vivre, right? Like, live your life. But the effect of what you're doing, essentially, is just quickening the mass acceptance of stakeholder capitalism. They're killing shareholder capitalism in front of our faces, so that they can now formally adopt stakeholder capitalism, and make it so that
you're moving it along,
right? And here's a clip that proves that.
Advice could you give companies that sort of get swept up in this?
Well, the issue is who are you beholden to? Are you beholden?
For our audio listeners, the person who's talking is Heidi Welsh. Underneath her name is her title is the Sustainable Investments Institute Executive Director. Ooh, sustainable. That's we need to have the bell. I don't know if you can hear this, but
yeah.
Many different stakeholders, but in particular, you're beholden to your investors, and investors are not showing are not pulled back from looking at how companies affect and are affected by society.
Wait, what? Let's play that back a second. This is, again, it's quiet, beginning to look a lot like I was fucking right.
Investors are not showing, are not pulling back from looking at how companies affect and are affected by society.
Companies are not, investors are not being held back by the way that companies are being viewed by their effects on society.
Yeah, so then those are de facto not investors. Or they are investing in something, but it's not finances.
Well, this is the product. No, it's not the product. It's not the product.
Exactly. So if you look, I was actually listening to our dear friend Clint Russell this morning, and he did a good
mega fan of the channel.
Yeah, he loves us. Because we're ideologically pure, Jason.
Of course.
But he did a good breakdown. He's really good on the ESG stuff.
And no, he's not. No. Hang on a second. Let me just correct you on something. Tommy Sammons is amazing on the ESG stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Clint Russell takes all his ESG stuff point by point from Tommy Sammons. I'm saying it out loud.
Touche.
I decided never to mention this motherfucker's name again, but you got me. Because Tommy's a friend of mine, and he's a friend of the channel, and I love Tommy Sammons. I love Tommy Sammons to the depth of my soul.
Okay, I'm making a vow right now. I'm only going to refer to Tommy Sammons on this topic. You're 100% correct.
Because fuck Clint Russell. The one thing that tipped me over, right, into like, because what? He said some shit about the channel, whatever. Okay, fine. That's just
no, I don't care. It's an ongoing joke.
The thing that tipped me over with him, and this is why after this, we're never mentioning his name again. He's dead. He's dead to me. Okay. The thing that tipped me over was I caught wind of this, and I watched, I've been watching all of Tammy's, Tammy's. Tammy. I'm transitioning Tommy. I watched all Tommy's ESG stuff, and then I saw Clint had a thing, and I clicked on it because I had heard rumblings about this. And I watched it, and I'm like, oh, wow, you literally lifted verbatim all of Tommy's stuff and never accredited it. You're making it sound like this is your big brain idea, and let's be frank. Clint Russell is about one step above Fetterman, okay? Post stroke, the man's a fucking idiot. He's a mid-level idiot who just repeats shit. He's worse than Timcast. He's worse than Timcast, which is amazing. Okay? No, I'm done with this. I just want to get this all out and then I'm done with it.
Do it.
And he's a fucking plagiarist. So fuck Clint Russell, and we're never mentioning his name on the podcast again.
Okay, deal done. I will honor it. So there's another level beyond ESG. I think it's called like EMI or something like that, where it's a rating system where ESG gets its numbers from, which is pure Soros. Mm-hmm. Because again, you have to look into the, like, you can explain it, and this was going to be my criticism of Mr. Plagiarist, who we shall refer to him as here on and forth, right? Forth going?
What's the for
dipshit
forever from here on to in perpetuity? Name, if we ever have to reference him, it's just dipshit.
That's okay. It. So on the dipshit show, I forgot where I was going with that. Something. So this there's a rating. Oh yeah, where he doesn't get to is the why. What? Because they're bad. Why are they bad? What's the motivation? So there's this rating system that goes in and sets the scores for the ESG to set their scores based off your adherence to the new morality, and it's all Soros funded. So Soros is funding this again. If you understand Soros, okay, what does he do? He plays with currencies. From what I know, I'm still trying to piece this together, but I think that's the only interesting aspect to attack this at, because everybody knows, okay, capitalism is being attacked. It's being attacked by similar people. And the same criticism works for people like Lindsay. He's diagnosed it as Gnosticism, but look, what is Soros's, I hate saying Soros's, Soros motivation. Is it currency manipulation? Because I don't. That doesn't follow from this. That's a really, really long
control.
Game.
It's control. So you have to ask this. Here's a big question, right? One is, I've been coming up with the term sort of prime desires. What's the desire behind the desire, right? Where it's kind of following the form of formalism, right? You have the outward projection and what's behind it. If you're talking about people who have billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, who work with who are in charge of the Fed, who is a money printing machine, money is not the issue. Money is not the desire. It's not, that's just it's a tool. It's a mechanism. So what's behind it? Well, it's control. Okay. Why do they want control? I would posit the claim that, and we're seeing this, of course, with Fetterman and the rest of it, let me take this off, is that the elite structure has become polluted. Let me put it this way. Over the last 100 years, especially, and we saw this during the Gilded Age, high levels of corruption within the government structures, right? People who are being elected to high office and put in positions of great power, who are massively corrupt. And when it's isolated, all systems have corruption. It's an unavoidable. But you want to minimize it, and you want to get it to isolated areas where you can keep an eye on it. Now that the corruption has become so widespread, what has happened is that the system is now selecting for highly corrupt people, not highly competent people, but highly corrupt people.
Right.
Because you need a certain amount of corruption for people to turn a blind eye to this stuff now. It's getting so obvious. Look at what we just suffered through the last 3 years. Okay. Why that happened, why that could happen, is you had a bunch of scientists and scientific institutions and medical institutions, all the rest of it, who understood that their funding would get cut off. And we saw that in real time, of doctors being canceled, major names in the field being cut off, canceled, non-person bank accounts, all the rest of it, right? They understand that fear. So they toe the line because they don't want to get all their funding cut off. Mm-hmm. So they just go, yeah, sure.
Absolutely. But I'm talking about for the prime movers, what is their motivation? And the only thing I can boil it down to is it's not, and this is again, a diagnostic problem between the shithead and even people like Lindsay, where they can go back and it's funny. Cause I was listening to Benjamin Boyce and his conversation with Lindsay and Sargon, Carl, and Lindsay's aware of it because he says this goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. It's the same story, right? You can have this hidden knowledge. So Lindsay diagnoses it as Gnosticism, but that's only the one side. He said, okay, so if that's the problem, is that you have people who want the control, want the power, what's the solution? If that's the antithesis, the thesis has, if the antithesis, whatever it is that makes you want control in a negative way, then there has to be a positive side to that. And what is the positive opposite? Well, that's got to be a correct moral structure. And this is the only way I can see it. And someone tell me if I'm wrong, but if the motivation is an incorrect moral structure, then the solution must be a correct moral structure. So where do you find that? And if you follow that, then these things must follow on down. So wherever you're going to attack it, and this goes back to criticisms of Tim Pool, of all these things, to me, it's an inevitable through line in every one of these topics. And I know I repeat myself and I even get bored of it, but find what is the correct moral structure. And it's something with good outcomes.
Okay, we're not going to get to the James Lindsay thing I was going to do. No, hang on. It's fine. Because we're coming up to the hour. But let's just close with Jim Carrey. Because here's the bitter white pill. Here's the news you can use section of the show. Because it's not all bad. Something's happening. Something's turning. I believe, to the bottom of my heart, that a call went out somewhere in 2020. And many people responded, myself included, that there is a sudden turn towards Christianity, whether it be orthodoxy or other forms. I think other forms are going to be rejected and thrown out and collapse in favor of others, because there's something happening in response. And I can only share my personal experience. I know I've said this on the show before. In October 2020, up to that point, I was an atheist, anti-theist in the Chris Hitchens school, right? I had begun to soften my position by that point, but I had certainly was still very, very much an atheist. If you had asked me in September of 2020, you know, do you believe in God? I would have said no. In October 2020, I was starting experiencing sort of what I would describe as emotional breakdowns. My daughter had just been born. My hand was still screwed up. We were going to second lockdowns, COVID lockdowns in Montreal. I was lost. I was at the most desperate point of my life. And I've been through some nasty points in my life. And man, I had never been so low. And I called out essentially to God, but I wouldn't have formulated them in my mind that way. I wouldn't have said it that way at that time. I just called out, like, what do I do? And I had a very clear voice tell me to bear witness. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And a week later, I was hit with the most massive wall of shame I've ever experienced in my life. And I got through that, and that through that humbling, and I became a Christian in that moment from 32 years of an atheist and anti-theist. And I was hardcore, man. Like,
okay. Let me give you my universalist pushback on this as well. Do you think that that's inevitable because you are a Westerner? The default?
I think it's inevitable based on a few things. Yes. Okay. I was raised in a very nominal Christian household. Like, in terms of, it was around, I was aware of it. One of my aunts was very religious, but the rest of my family wasn't. So, and I had read the Bible and I had believed in God until my grandfather died at age 12, and I couldn't reconcile that. And then I became an atheist, for all ostensive purposes. Mm-hmm. So yes, is there a cultural element to that? Sure.
Right. Like, if you grew up in India or Israel or Timbuktu, would it have been Christ is the answer? Or would it have been a proper moral structure? I'm still not sure about this. And I never condemn. For me, it was, because that's how I was raised.
I can't say for sure. Right. But regardless of what you, here's the thing. I'm not trying to convert people. I'm not trying to say that I'm right, you're wrong, or that that this is the only way forward. I'm simply saying, if you were a citizen of the West, which most of our listeners are, you are the beneficiary of a Christian nation, of a Christian outlook, of a Christian society. Like, this is what brought you, it's what's born you to this point. And again, it's not the same criticism I have with liberalism, but it's like the fat of that has fed you.
Yeah. Well, that's right? It. Recognize the broth that you were brewed in. Get over your fucking ego and say, okay, I'm not better than the wisdom that was passed
what
on.
What I will say about my personal experience is that it was revelation. It was transformative and it was metaphysical. That voice was not my voice. That wasn't just a voice in my head of me telling myself something. That was coming from outside of me, and I'm convinced of that. Now, maybe I'm crazy. Okay. I've been called worse. But that experience, also, as I'm reading the Lives of Saints, I've gotten more into reading about Orthodoxy, that experience is completely consistent with thousands of years of experiences of exactly the same shit, calling out, getting an answer, being received.
Hey, look at that. It's like, what's the, he who asks?
Yeah. So
did you knock? Was Jason knocking?
I was knocking on that door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Let's just do the Jim Carrey and then we'll carry this out. Sorry, let me set this up. This is Jim Carrey talking to, I don't know who they're talking to. You think this might be a few years old? I'm not sure.
That's what I heard, but I've never saw it till now. And then I saw two clips in the last week. So,
right. What's obvious to me now is that So these kind of conversations we're having between us, and we've been having this with other people in our milieu, but again, we're all way down the totem pole of hierarchy of broadcasting. Like, you know, we're not going to make, there's no way we can. Yeah. We're nothing. Who the hell are we? But when you start hearing the exact same things we're saying, more or less coming out of high profile people's mouths, people who have the ability to actually,
You know what? Then, sorry, just to jump in, why don't you do Robbie Williams and then Jim Carrey?
Sure,
because I think that's an interesting.
We're running over time, so I don't want you getting in trouble with your wife. So
I got to pee, but I'll hold out.
We'll do this fast. Yeah, because the Robbie Williams thing is also telling.
Yeah,
this is Robbie Williams talking about a post-truth world.
We're in a post-truth world where you can't believe the media, you can't believe Big Pharma, you can't believe politicians, you can't believe what you're eating, you can't believe yourself. It's, you know, if at any time in human, since we've existed, there is a time where this whole empire could fall, it's now. And it's of course, these things are going to arise because we can't trust anybody or anything. And I personally just believe and invest in my wife and my kids and my family. And I believe in them. We're in a post-truth world where you can't believe the media.
Stop. Okay.
Boomer.
Does it sound familiar?
No, but
does it sound familiar?
Robbie fucking Williams, right? Like, this is
it's not a nobody. Like, his career might be on the
most famous man in Britain for 30 years,
right?
Like, this is Mr. What's the group?
He's like the British Michael Bublé.
No, he's the British Eric Clapton.
Well, maybe
that was a joke.
That's right, and this is Jim Carrey.
Oh, thank you, Jerry.
Leave darkness behind, and it takes a champion to make that decision. And I really want to speak to the fact that I've had some challenges in the last couple of years myself, ultimately, I believe that suffering leads to salvation, and in fact, it's the only way. That we have to somehow accept, not deny, but feel our suffering and feel our losses. And then we make one of two decisions. We either decide to go through the gate of resentment, which leads to vengeance, which leads to self-harm, which leads to harm to others, or we go through the gate of forgiveness, which leads to grace. And your
being Christ has risen.
Is
truly has risen.
An indication that you've made that decision already. You've made the decision to walk through the gate of forgiveness to grace, just as Christ did on the cross. He suffered terribly, and he was broken by it to the point of doubt and a feeling of absolute abandonment, which all of you felt. And then there was a decision to be made. And the decision was to look upon the people who were causing that suffering, or the situation that was causing that suffering, with compassion and with forgiveness. And that's what opens the gates of heaven for all of us. So I wish that for all of you. I wish that for myself. I know that, you know, no matter what I've suffered, most of you have suffered worse than that. But that's why I admire you.
I mean,
well said.
Where's the lie?
Good roundup there. I like it, and I think you're 100% right. It's. I'm still trying to diagnose what it is. It seems to me to be almost like an inevitable cyclicalness, where things get so crazy that sanity is self-imposed.
What's Revelation?
We're definitely due.
This whole month in the build up to the Joe Rogan Friend or Fed, which we'll do in June, is an examination of narratives in some way or shape or form, because I think that's going to the build up will be examining Joe Rogan, the new media, and narratives. But I mean, this is part of the narrative. Like, the Christian narrative is the most powerful narrative we have, whether you believe it or not. It's the story that transforms space, time, and dimension. and everything that you think of is real is all boils down to the cross. It all comes to the cross. So, you know, if you are one of these people who believes in truth. Oh, we didn't do Gilmore.
Shit. Okay, next week we will week. Play the Sarah Gilmore. Is it Gilmore? Something Gilmore. BuzzFeed clip. Until then, tune in for next week's sermon.
Yes. from the mountain. I'll be on a mountain.
You will be wearing a robe with the proper accoutrements.
I almost came close to wearing my
okay, we can't talk past the outro music.
Okay. Love you guys. Thank you so much for watching. We will talk to you again very soon.